We'll hear arguments first this morning in Brown against Thompson, the Secretary of State of the State of Wyoming. Ms. Davidson, you may proceed whenever you're ready.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the Court, a simple, straightforward issue is being presented today for your review. The issue is whether a county may constitutionally receive a representative to its state House of Representatives based merely upon its status as a county and without regard to its population. In addition to other legal considerations which will be presented in argument, it is important that the Court have the benefit of a brief factual overview. When faced with the decennial task of reapportioning its legislative membership in 1981, the Wyoming State Legislature determined that the population of the state of Wyoming had grown by 137,141 persons, or in other words, by 24%. Each of the state's 23 counties had experienced a population growth but one, Niobrara County. Instead, the population of that county had stabilized during the 10-year period from 1970 to 1980 at 2,924 persons. As introduced in the House, the 1981 Reapportionment Act provided for a membership of 63 members in the House of Representatives, a statutory ratio formula based upon population considerations was used to determine which counties would receive representatives. Again,
Ms. Davidson, is this material which you're speaking of now in the record somewhere or in the opinion of the district court?
Yes, Mr. Justice. Most of this material is in the record. Based upon the statutory ratio formula, each of the state's 23 counties, again with the exception of one, Niobrara County, would receive at least one representative. The 1981 Reapportionment Act then passed the House of Representatives, providing that the House membership would continue to be comprised of 63 members, but Niobrara County would be combined with its neighboring county of Goshen. The Senate, however, changed the 1981 Reapportionment Act and instead provided that the House membership should be increased to 64. The additional representative would be awarded to Niobrara County. The Act then was committed to the conference committee, where it soon became very apparent that the committee would be deadlocked and remain deadlocked unless a compromise was effected. Such a compromise was struck. The compromise was that Niobrara County would receive the 64th member. But at the same time, too, if any court determined that the gratuitous grant of a representative to Niobrara County was unconstitutional, then Niobrara would be combined with Goshen County. There must have been a strong realization in the Wyoming State Legislature that there would be a strong possibility, a probability, that the provision would be struck. In 1964, a three-judge panel in the case Schaefer versus Thompson had already determined that Article 3, Section 3 of the Wyoming State Constitution was not to be applied in future instances involving apportionment of the Senate, for the article provided that each county would constitute a senatorial district and each county would therefore receive a senator.
Ms. Davidson, did you attack the apportionment scheme as a whole or just as it applied to the one county?
Mr. Justice, we attacked it just as to the one county.
Why not the whole plan?
Although there was an awareness that the whole plan was probably unconstitutional, we received a directive from our clients to attack only that portion of the Reapportionment Act which gave Niobrara County a representative, because it was a feeling that any consideration other than population was wrong, and clearly an award had been made to this county based upon its status as a political subdivision.
You don't think you weakened your case by this tactic?
I think certainly we may have done so in the district court level.
It
Why are you so concerned about the grant of a single representative to this one county?
I think, Mr. Justice, we go back to the fact again that the grant was given purely because of its status as a political subdivision, that people's voting rights were diluted substantially in giving them not only that particular sort of grant.
But you don't care about the rest of the state.
I can't say that is not true. Of course, we care about the rest of the state. And so, frankly, do our clients. Maybe if I can give you some background, that would be instrumental.
Would you, as part of that background, tell us who your clients are and what their interest is in winning this lawsuit?
Yes. There are, of course, seven named plaintiffs or appellants in this case, each of whom represent one of the most populous counties in the state of Wyoming. In addition, these ladies represent the League of Women Voters.
She's using a name.
By a referendum which was passed by the League of Women Voters at their state convention, it was determined that the one county grant to Niobrara would be attacked. It was also to a feeling of that group that they would be unable to pass a broader referendum so as to attack the whole reapportionment plan.
In your state, does the League, is it statewide in this organization?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. In fact, it has.
I come back to my question, why didn't you attack the whole apportionment, the whole state apportionment of the House?
Hopefully I had explained that. But if I may once again, what happened was a referendum had been passed by the League of Women Voters, which authorized the attack of only that one portion of the reapportionment plan. It was felt by the membership or by the leadership of that group that no broader authority would ever be given because of the political ramifications and arguments that would be presented by the membership in attacking or considering, pardon me, that broader authority.
Your clients have to reach a sort of a political compromise, I suppose, just the way the legislature.
Yes, that is in fact true.
But that political compromise is not binding on us, I hope.
Pardon me?
That political compromise is not binding on us, I hope.
No, sir, it is not.
Well, how is it here at all?
Pardon me again.
If we decide this, will it apply to the other counties? Or just one county?
I think, Mr. Justice, that your authority goes as far as you want it to go. And certainly my clients are not going to be unhappy if your decision reaches beyond the consideration of this one county.
But aren't we bound by the pleadings in the case?
I think not, Mr. Justice. And I go back to two decisions, the initial decision of Reynolds versus Sims and also Swan versus Adams. Particularly in the Swan case, it was a situation where this court looked at the apportionment of the Senate, although only one issue had been brought to the court for its attention, the reapportionment plan of the House. And the court in that case determined that it would exceed the pleadings and it would address the issue which involved the Senate.
I just don't understand how the League of Women Voters or any other private organization can limit this court.
They cannot. I do not believe that they can.
I should have said try to.
Yes, Your Honor. One thing that is important for you to understand is that all parties stipulated that the overall relative range was 89% in the 64 plan, and that the ratio was 3.25 to 1. While the 63 plan had an overall relative range of 66% and a ratio of 2.09 to 1. The three-judge panel, of course, found that the 64 plan, the vote dilution suffered by the appellates below, was de minimis. And even if it were or were not, as the case may be, that there were rational state policies which justify the discrepancy.
Could I ask you, did you attack the alternative?
The 63 plan?
No. Did you say that the conference committee or the bill says if this provision for this county is stricken, that it would be combined with another county?
Yes, that is correct.
Did you attack that part of it?
No, we did not, Mr. Justice.
Well, suppose that this county is combined with the next county, or whichever county it's to be combined with.
Yes.
What then would be the maximum deviation between the largest county and the smallest county?
The
largest district and the smallest district?
Thank you. The overall relative range would remain the same under the 63 plan at 66%.
And that would be between what?
That would be the difference between the most overrepresented county and the most underrepresented county, which would be Washakie as being the most underrepresented, Sublette as being the most overrepresented county. Mm-hmm. In this instance, Niobrara was combined mm-hmm. with a contiguous county, Goshen County. The plaintiff's complaint was dismissed with prejudice. Thereafter, of course, this appeal ensued. Since the court in the 1964 case, Reynolds versus Sims, held that both houses of a bicameral state legislature must be apportioned on the basis of equal population, the reapportionment law has been more clearly defined in the 1973 cases of Gaffney versus Cummings, White versus Register, and Mahan versus Howell. The first two cases stand for the proposition that if the overall relative range of a reapportionment plan exceeds 9.9%, then a prima facie violation of the Equal Protection Clause has been deemed to have occurred. The 9.9% hurdle in this case is very easy to jump. The overall relative range of the 64 plan is 89%. But Mahan versus Howell goes one step further. Even if the overall relative range exceeds the minimum 9.9% limitation, the state can save the reapportionment plan by showing that there are legitimate considerations incident to the effectuation of a rational state policy. Basically, a two-pronged test applies. First, is the state's policy furthered by the plan? And secondly, if it is, are the deviations within acceptable limitations? This court has found that neither history, topography, geography, sparseness of population, vastness of area, economic considerations like tax consequences, or uniqueness are factors which have been found to be rational state policy. In Mahan, though, the integrity of maintaining political subdivisions was found to be a rational state policy, yet the overall relative range did not exceed 16.4%. The state of Wyoming, in this case, hangs its hat on the same sort of rational justification, that is, that the maintenance of the integrity of political subdivisions saves the 64 plan. There are other factual incidences, though, that differentiate this case from the Mahan case. The first factor, which is necessary to consider, is that the Virginia General Assembly had been authorized by Constitution not only to act general law, but to act specific or local law in regard to the government, organization, and powers of cities, counties, and towns. That sort of authority is specifically prohibited by our Wyoming state constitution. No such authority is given to our Wyoming state legislature. Lastly, the Virginia plan produced the most minimal deviation possible while keeping the counties intact. In Wyoming, in this case, there was no showing that the state of Wyoming had made an honest, good faith effort to produce the minimal deviations possible.
Well, but there is, I suppose it's almost self-demonstrating that if Niobrara County is to have one member of the legislature, an alternative plan that would both provide for a minimal deviation, and that would give Wyoming a 200 or 300 member House of Representatives.
Yes, that is true. If we went back and used the smallest county as the most basic unit, being the incremental unit in determining membership of the House, it would well exceed 300 members.
Ms. Davidson, what practical harm do your various clients in the more populous counties of Wyoming suffer as a result of giving Niobrara a representative rather than half a representative?
That's a very good question. If I may, I would ask the court to consider these examples. Appellant Margaret Brown resides in Carbon County, Wyoming. In the past 10 years, that county has grown by approximately 7,500 persons. The county received the same amount of representation that it did in 1973, three members. But the vote dilution, which has occurred there, is on a scale of 2.49 to 1. In other words, Mrs. Brown's vote is 2.5 times less valuable, if you will, than a vote cast in Niobrara County.
But the statewide, it really doesn't make a whole lot of difference what the people in Niobrara County do or their 1 out of 64 representatives do, does it?
If I understand you to say what is the impact of an individual voter statewide, it would not be very great. If I may, though, Mr. Justice.
Isn't that, again, the weakness of your case?
I think
In attacking just the one county?
I think it is not, because the court in past instances have said that any time a vote cast in one part of a state is worth substantially less than a vote cast anywhere else in the state, then there must be some sort of tremendous vote dilution which has occurred. In this case, we find that the maximum vote ratio is 3.25 to 1. In other words, an individual in Washakie County who casts a vote finds that his vote is worth 3.25 times less that than a vote cast in Niobrara County. I think even more in point, maybe more illustrative, is the case of appellant Jane Maxwell, who lives in Laramie County, my county. During the past 10 years, the county's population has grown by 12,000, almost 500 people, and we find that in that instance, that not only has that county not maintained the original legislative grant, or in other words, number of representatives of 11 that it had in 1970, but during the past decade, because of population shifts and such, it actually lost two representatives. You compare that to a situation where the county has grown four times that of the stagnant population of Niobrara, and you see that there is a very substantial divergency that has occurred.
Would anything in a court order directing the Wyoming legislature to follow the 63-member plan rather than the 64-member plan and merge Niobrara with whatever the other county is, that wouldn't get Laramie County back the two representatives that you say it has lost?
That is true. It would not get back the two representatives which the county has lost. But again, we look to the fact that a county, as a political unit, received a representative. People somehow were lost in the shuffle.
What about the state's constitution? Does that have some part in the response you just gave?
Yes, well, there are two considerations which our Wyoming state constitution asks us to look at. First of all, I've already stated is that each county shall constitute a representative district, while at the same time, in the very same provision, our constitution provides that reapportionment shall occur on a basis of population. And the two sort of thoughts or ideas are in Congress in this case.
Can I ask you a hypothetical question? Supposing we agreed with you the plan was presently structured was unconstitutional, we suggested that the appropriate remedy might be to have a resident of Niobrara County remain in the legislature but be elected by the state at large. Would that cure the objection for you?
I think it would not, Your Honor. If I may, let me make sure I understand.
It would take care of the voting disparity. It would take care of the disparity in voting power between people in your county and elsewhere. In fact, the people in Niobrara County then would have a lesser vote than anybody else in the state.
But, Mr. Justice, you still are limiting who can be qualified to sit in that seat. If I understand...
But you have no interest in that, as I understand it. You're only interested is in the weight of your vote, of your client's vote.
We're also very concerned that the county of Niobrara receives a seat, and Niobrara would continue to receive a seat, as I understand your hypothetical.
Well, supposing all the whole legislature was elected at large, but they provided residence requirements just exactly as they have now, would that be unconstitutional? And everybody then had an equal vote for every legislator.
I don't know that it would be unconstitutional given prior rulings of this court. However, it would be very unworkable in another sense. I do not believe that it would.
Well, if you agree that would not be unconstitutional, it seems to me you must also agree that my first hypothetical would not be unconstitutional. Because then the voting power as to, for the people who voted for the Niobrara legislator would be equally distributed throughout the state.
But again,
you wouldn't like it, I understand. You don't want that county to be represented. But your claim must be founded on the Constitution in order to prevail here.
But again, you would have a very small group of people, the citizens of Niobrara, who would be receiving one representative. And I think that that's where we find the substantial disparity occurs.
Ms. Davidson, this type of plan has been in existence since 1913, as I recall, has it not?
I believe a more accurate statement might be, Mr. Justice, that Niobrara County has received a representative since the county's creation in 1913.
Since what?
Since the county's creation in 1913.
Yes. And has this type plan been approved by three-judge courts before?
Yes, but there were different factors to be considered at that point of time. Additionally, those courts did not have the full benefit of this court's most recent rulings.
What were the dates of those decisions?
There was a 1964 case.
Was that after Reynolds v. Sims?
Yes, it was. Subsequent to that, there was a 1965 case, and by maybe giving you a small explanation. The 1964 case involved the attack of the reapportionment of the Wyoming State House and State Senate. The court found that the Wyoming State Senate plan constituted an invidious discrimination. It did not so find as regards the Wyoming House of Representatives. It continued to maintain jurisdiction, if you will, of the case, and later in 1965, when the legislature took no action to remedy the inequities that were apparent, the court came back in and then ordered a court-ordered apportionment. Again, in 1971, there was an attack on the Wyoming State House of Representatives. The court again found that there was no violation of the Equal Protection Clause. But interestingly enough, the court in that case did not use the standards of measurement which this court had endorsed. Instead, it looked at what sort of changes had occurred from the 1965 court order plan and found that there was no discrimination then in that instance. And, of course, then this case followed.
Were any of those cases reviewed here? Any of those?
Yes, Your Honor, there was one, Harrison versus Schaefer, which trailed on the heels of the 1965 case.
And there was a summary affirmance in that instance?
Yes, there was. If I may, there's one other distinguishing factor. Again, in all of these instances, a statutory ratio formula was used. And in all of those instances, Niobrara County was found to justify or to be deserving of a grant of one legislator. But in this instance, in applying the statutory ratio formula, we find that it does not have enough population to justify a representative. The statutory formula told us that we needed to round to the nearest whole number, and any time that the ratio percentage could be rounded to the whole number of one, then the county would be entitled to a representative. But in this case, the only way that Niobrara's percentage could be rounded was down to zero, so it deserved none.
May I ask one other general question? Does the record tell us anything about the political makeup of the legislature or Niobrara County? What political party is involved?
I believe that there may be some reference in the record as to the political makeup of Niobrara County, and as I recall, Your Honor, if your specific question is what is that makeup, that they have a Republican representative.
And what is the majority of the legislature?
Republican.
Is there a significant, is it a closely, what is the makeup of the legislature, if you recall generally? How big is the Republican majority in the legislature?
Frankly, Your Honor, I don't recall.
But you don't, there's no claim here that that's going to be affected by the outcome of this case?
No, there is no claim at all of that. If I may capsulize, appellants pray that Article 3, Section 3 of the Wyoming State Constitution and the 64 Plan be declared unconstitutional because they give a vote to a county and not to people. Thank you.
Mr. Cox.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the Court. We agree with the appellant's characterization that this case involves the apportionment of one representative to one representative district in Wyoming, that is, to the citizens and taxpayers of Niobrara County. All other representatives were apportioned by the legislature by the use of a population-based formula. And that formula, as stated in the pleadings and as admitted by the plaintiffs today, by the appellants today, comports with applicable law.
This is an unfair question, but in the light of decisions from this court in the past, do you think the entire apportionment of the Wyoming House is constitutional?
Yes, Your Honor, I do. The reason that I think it's that it is constitutional relates to our theory of the case as we've talked about Niobrara County in particular. And that is that even though there are substantial statistical deviations using the relative range figure, those deviations do not indicate any significant erosion of any person's fundamental rights of free and fair participation.
Those deviations are higher than any that have been upheld here before.
That's correct, Your Honor. They are considerably lower than those reapportionment plans stricken by this court in Reynolds v. Sims and its companion cases. They are in an area that this court hasn't really had an opportunity to look at before. This case is somewhat unique in that respect.
Well, didn't we summarily affirm a three-judge court back in the 60s?
That's correct, Your Honor. And Harrison,
what was the deviation there?
The deviation was either 89 or 90%.
Do you think that affirmance is a, or that three-judge court decision is consistent with our later cases?
I'm not sure what you're asking. I think it is consistent with your later cases.
Well, 89% is consistent with it.
Yes, Your Honor. The reason that I contend that is because this court has looked at that percentage deviation figure as an indicator, and a very important indicator, which shows just how close a state is coming to numerical equality in its apportionment decisions. But the court has not invested that statistic with any particular significance, except in saying that if a plan deviates by less than 10%, it is presumptively valid and there can't be a threat. The reason there can't be a threat to majority control if you've got less than 10% is it's statistically highly improbable to have a minority dominating the legislature if you've got less than 10% deviation. If you have more than 10% deviation, I suggest that we use the other standards that this court has used in the past and look at other statistical measures to see whether that indicator that says there's deviation between districts indicates some kind of fundamental impact, invidious impact upon the exercise of fundamental rights. This court talked in Reynolds v. Sims and its companion cases, the one man, one vote rule means that the majority has to control the legislature, that if a small minority, such as 25% in Alabama or 18% in Maryland, has a stranglehold on the legislature, then other persons, the substantive rights of the majority, are threatened. In this case, the substantive rights of the majority in Wyoming, or the plaintiffs in particular, or the counties that they represent, are not threatened if we refer to those other statistical measures. The reasons for that are that the number of representatives in the Wyoming House substantially exceeds the number of representative districts, a measure emphasized by this court in Reynolds v. Sims. Further, the legislature is responsive to a majority. Even if we take, deliberately sample the legislative districts in the state and take those that are most overrepresented, we still find 47% of the, not less than 47% can elect a majority. It takes at least 47% to elect a majority of representatives.
Mr. Cox, is it basically your position that the state policy of having one, at least one representative from each county would justify any deviation, no matter how large?
No, Justice O'Connor, we would not take that position. Clearly, Reynolds teaches us that although political subdivisions may be a factor that deserve consideration in apportionment, carried too far, there could be a submergence of equal participation.
Well, what's too far if 89% isn't too far?
I don't think that that statistic alone tells us the answer to that question. I think we have to look at several of these statistics because each just measures, and sometimes in an exaggerated fashion, a particular part of the statistical picture.
Well, what if there are only 100 people in this county? You would be arguing the same thing, wouldn't you?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Even though the deviation might be 500%.
That's correct, Your Honor. But fortunately, we're not presented with that.
And would you be making the same argument if there were five counties like Niobrara?
If we looked at all of the statistics and we found that there wasn't a threat to the people of the other state, I would be comfortable doing that. But when you start getting into a number of counties that are that far away, you could get into a situation like in Reynolds, where a few rural counties with a tiny fraction of the state's population were dominating the legislature. And if we look at it from that angle, there's no way we have enough rational state interest here to justify
so
that.
So you're really suggesting to us if we return to that, give more weight to that equation. We used to do that way back in the 60s.
I wasn't aware that the court had departed from that. I find frequent references to that standard, and it really seems to me that the approach taken in Reynolds and its companions, looking at all of those measures to determine whether there is invidious discrimination, is a good approach. If we examine the effects of this decision to give one representative to Niobrara County upon the plaintiffs, then the analysis comes down to what happens to the plaintiffs if we have that extra representative or if we don't. If we look at those statistics, we see that 46% of the population of Wyoming resides in the seven counties represented by the plaintiffs, the appellants. They elect 28 of 64 representatives. If Niobrara County's legislature were withdrawn, they would elect 28 of 63. If we look at a percentage to see which, how much percentage of control each of those counties has in the legislature, they would each gain 0.03 or 0.07 of a percent of increased power, if you will, in the Wyoming legislature if Niobrara County representative were withdrawn. The district
court, assuming in the state that in the House of Representatives there is one person who is unconstitutionally elected, Would anybody have a right to contest that?
If
it's only one vote out of 300.
There's no question that the plaintiffs have standing to raise this issue, Your Honor.
But would they be entitled to relief from an unconstitutional representative, just one? Well, suppose it's an imbecile. Would you have a right to object to that and prevail?
To an imbecile serving in the legislature?
Yeah.
Your Honor? Yes, I think they'd have a right to object to that.
Well, why don't these people have a right to object here?
They have a right to object. Their burden is to show that there is an injury to a substantial
right.
Well,
isn't that an injury to them?
It is an injury in a theoretical sense, as the district court...
Injury, a theoretical? Well,
yes. I mean, we can measure the injury statistically, Your Honor, and if we do measure...
Well, how do you get around a vote that's an illegal vote? It hurts. There's no degree involved.
What we're suggesting to the court is we look at the nature and the degree of injury here. And if we look at the nature of the injury...
Well, do you admit that there is an injury?
There is deviation from strict population equality.
The word was injury.
I can't find the injury in a statistically significant sense, Your Honor. The district court looked at these figures, and they focused on the substantive rights of the plaintiffs, their counties, and other voters in Wyoming.
A portion of the opinion was taken up at the fact that this case had been there four times before. That was a large part of the opinion, wasn't it?
That was cited in the opinion, yes, Your Honor.
All they were saying is this is another run of the same thing.
Well, and the district court was correct in that this, if we take our worst possible jaundiced view of this apportionment plan, it contains nothing more dilutive of votes than anything previously reviewed by the district court. I don't know that we particularly have to stand on that. If we take a fresh look at the nature of the injury that's alleged here.
Well, that would put me as much before.
Yes. That's correct, Your Honor. The opinion also talks about the nature and degree of the alleged injury and the arguments put forth by the state to justify the deviation from strict population equality. We certainly can't deny the existence of those statistics. And the reasons for this districting decision, I believe, are more important in Wyoming than in Virginia or any other state whose apportionment plans have been reviewed to date. Local governments in Wyoming, like local governments in most states, particularly counties and school districts, are charged with important public duties and providing essential public services and construction of public works and so forth. What distinguishes Wyoming from many other states is there are explicit and strict constitutional limits upon the ability of counties to raise money, either through taxing or borrowing. And in comparing those limits to other states such as Delaware, Maryland, even our neighboring states of Montana and Colorado, we see that counties in other states have significantly greater ability to raise revenue. In addition, in Wyoming, we do not have provisions for county self-rule. In order for a county to obtain the necessary powers to deal with new, growing situations and new needs, such as we see in the mineral boom areas of Wyoming, they need help from the legislature. If we look at every local government in Wyoming, we see that they are unable to raise sufficient revenues to provide an acceptable level of public services. Accordingly, the legislature has enacted a number of supplemental revenue schemes to provide monies on a variety of criteria, not all of which are consistent, to help local governments like counties and school districts supply essential public services. Those political decisions to figure out what criteria should be used in revenue distribution to determine which new taxes should be imposed, or in the case of school funding, to determine whether a greater share of local tax resources should be taken by the state and redistributed under a new criteria. Those decisions, of course, affect the very lifeblood of local government in Wyoming. And those decisions, of course, are made in the legislature. Quite simply, local government in Wyoming is dependent on the legislature. There's a certain vulnerability of counties like Niobrara that is set forth in the record, that because of political decisions made in the state legislature, Niobrara County is contributing substantially more revenues in the forms of excise taxes and school foundation monies to the state, which is then distributed to other local governments throughout the state, than that county is getting back through those same same distribution programs.
If you do not prevail here, what would be the immediate consequence of such a holding?
That is somewhat speculative, Your Honor.
The county would have no representation until the legislature comes up with a new plan. Would that be the result?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Well, I thought there was a provision that if you fail here, the arrangement of combination with Goshen County becomes effective.
The two counties would be combined.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, then this county doesn't lose if that happens.
It loses effective representation, Your Honor. Goshen County's got about three times as many registered voters as Niobrara County.
It would share a representative with the other county.
It would share a representative in a theoretical sense. It would have very little effect upon that representative's actions as a political matter.
In other words, are you saying the voters in that other county don't need the people in this county?
Unfortunately, that's true. If we examine, and this is in the record, if we examine the interests of those two counties in a number of state revenue programs, we see that the two counties are diametrically opposed. For instance, Niobrara County taxpayers provide a good deal of oil and gas severance tax to the state, a lot more than they get back, whereas Goshen County is exactly the opposite. Very little of that money goes to the state, and they draw many hundreds of thousands of dollars of that money every year. The same analysis in greater numerical terms applies to school funding. Niobrara County contributes a substantial amount, and by county I'm referring, of course, to the taxpayers and to taxes collected by the county. That money goes to the state in a much greater proportion. Matter of fact, there are no school funding supplements received by Niobrara County, whereas Goshen County receives one of the largest distributions of revenue from the foundation program of any county. And in addition, Goshen County has gone to the legislature and gotten specific local apportionments to help them maintain their educational system. To expect a representative to balance those competing considerations in a joint district like that is to really expect the impossible. A representative is going to have to make a choice as to how these revenue distribution and spending provisions work, and he's going to have to favor the more populous county unless he wants to be a one-term legislator.
I don't understand, though, your answer to the Chief Justice that if you lose, there has to be legislative action before the situation can be corrected. Is that so?
I think I might have misunderstood the question, Your Honor.
Because I gather that whether the plan is workable or not, if you lose, then the combination with Goshen becomes effective, doesn't it?
That's correct.
And whether or not the legislature does something further will be
up to the legislature. Yes, that's correct. If this court disapproves the apportionment of a representative to the citizens of Niobrara County, then the combination plan goes into effect automatically. What Reynolds v. Sims tells us about this case is that the interests of political subdivisions can be considered by the legislature, so long as those interests are related to a rational, legitimate state purpose, and so long as the legislature does not go too far. We submit to you that in providing Niobrara County with a much-needed representative, the The legislature of Wyoming has not gone too far. There is ample evidence of legitimate state interests to justify the numerical deviation. If, as in Reynolds and its companion cases, there were a substantial erosion of majority control so that a minority could injure other rights of a majority of a state's population, that's a different story. I think in a situation like that, the court has indicated that strict scrutiny is called for. But in the absence of a demonstrable injury to a fundamental interest, here, free and fair participation in a generally population-based apportionment plan that does not threaten majoritarianism, then the usual standard of constitutional analysis should apply, and that is to examine legitimate state interests that justify the decision.
Mr. So Cox, you think any reapportionment plan in any state should be acceptable as long as majority rule is not threatened?
Well, of course, there are other considerations that this court has addressed in cases like City of Mobile v. Bolden and Rogers v. Herman Lodge. But absence discrimination against a suspect class, if we're not looking at a scheme designed to deprive or submerge a minority.
So any rational state policy should justify the plan as long as a minority is not put in position, given the power to elect a majority of the legislature?
That's correct, Your Honor.
That would really be a departure from one man, one vote, wouldn't it?
I don't think so, Justice Brennan, because the whole purpose of one man, one vote, as this court observed in Connor v. Finch, is preservation of majoritarianism. And as you creep further and further away from majoritarianism, the demonstrable injury to people's rights becomes readily apparent. We don't have that problem here. I don't think you have to depart from Reynolds v. Sims one bit to approve this apportionment decision.
Mr. Cox, as a matter of history, how often has the state changed its county boundaries?
There have been isolated examples where counties have split off. Maybe a large county was divided. I don't know that much about the history of that.
Can that be done by the state legislature, or does it take constitutional amendment?
I believe it has to be. The voters of the county are involved, and then it has to be approved by the legislature. I don't believe a constitutional amendment is required because,
for example, if Niobrara and the adjoining county wanted to merge and become one county, they could do it by a referendum within the county approved by the state legislature or something like that.
Yes, I believe that could be done. But in fact, the citizens of Niobrara County split off from their neighboring county some 70 years ago.
Yeah.
For reasons that are colorfully illustrated in the intervener's briefs, I don't think that's very likely to occur, Your Honor. For the reasons that we have discussed, we would ask that this court affirm the decision of the district court.
Do you have anything further, Ms. Davidson?
Of course, it is appellant's position that the 89% overall relative range is a per se, if you will, violation of the Constitution. Greater clarification of the law has been made since a summary affirmance in Harrison versus Schaefer. An old, outdated mode of measurement of vote dilution has been used or has been propounded by the state, that is, that a minority cannot control basically the legislature. The most modern and accurate measurements are brushed to the wayside. Overall relative range is found to have no significance, and the same too with ratio. Where is the breaking point? Appellants submit that it's somewhere around the 16.4% overall relative range mark that was set forth in the Mahan versus Howell case. Even more remarkable is the fact that that breaking point has been exceeded since the summary affirmance of Harrison versus Schaefer in the state of Wyoming. First in the case, in the 1971 case, Thompson versus Thompson, and then again in this case, Brown versus Thompson. If you look at the administrative responsibilities which have been given to the counties as political subdivisions, you find that they are not so unlike the other administrative arms of states which are found in the majority of the states in these United States. Some reliance in almost all of those instances is based on revenue and taxation considerations. But I ask the court to remember that judicial remedies are available in those instances where a county may be discriminated in some manner by virtue of a vote that's taken on a tax bill or a revenue bill. And then if you will look, all in all, 1/64th of a vote makes very, very little difference when it comes to a matter being considered typically on the floor of a legislature. One thing I think that this court would find to be of interest is that there is at least one instance in a combination district where the minority county provides the senator to the legislature. And it's not to say that just because Goshen and Niobrara would be combined, that Niobrara County would not, in fact, be the county which would be sending its representative, if you will, the county representative, the multi-member district member representative, to the state house. In Wyoming, political subdivisions are no more nor no less unique, as I've already stated, than the majority of other counties found in the United States. Niobrara County, in summary, has judicial remedies available should it be found that it is a victim of discrimination. A one-man, three-vote principle, as evidenced in this case, is certainly unconstitutional. Might the court have any questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. The case is submitted. We'll hear arguments next in Morris.